The empowerment in being able to teach your horse to thrive in the world we brought him into, that he doesn't have to live with the natural instinct of survival, that he can thrive through knowledge of knowing how to manage himself and what to do in all the spaces and places he's going to find himself in within our human world. If we can teach him that in order for him to be comfortable and to thrive, that is the empowering thing for people.
Hello everyone, and welcome to this new episode of The Modern Rider, the first equestrian podcast that brings together the sports and horsemanship. A special place to discover inspiring interviews with the best equestrian professionals to help us become better, more aware and responsible riders. Apart from the horses themselves, the most beautiful thing about the equestrian sector is its community. We are all of us, the people who surround and care for them every day. But as you'll understand, this same community sometimes tends to segregate, with each person defending their way of doing things and judging others. But in the middle of all this, there are people who have managed to unite us. They have created a safe space where everyone can speak without fear or judgment, and enjoy the support of a group that shares the same values. Our guest today is one of those people who has managed to create that space, bringing together horse lovers from all over the world under the name of the PRT Method. Many of you already know him. I'm talking about Tristan Tucker. Before standing out with his method, Tristan traveled a long road in the equestrian world. From Australia, his country of origin, to Europe, he met thousands of horses and owners from all disciplines. After gaining experience in the world of racing, he climbed the rank in dressage, even competing in the European Championships. But where he truly excels is in helping horses through their humans so that both can enjoy a healthy, balanced, and enjoyable relationship. It's this journey, his philosophy, and powerful messages that he shares in this very special interview. So turn up the volume and get comfortable to listen to this exciting new interview. Well, welcome, Tristan. I'm really glad to have this talk with you today because, as I just said earlier before to press record, I believe that you're quite of a good representation of the message I try to share with this podcast. So, and I know you're quite busy, so I appreciate a lot that you came today to record this episode.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me. I look forward to it.
Great. Well, the first question is quite simple, just to let people know you a bit more. And I wanted just to ask you, can you tell us a bit about your equestrian journey and how you came to develop the TRT method?
Yeah, so I was, I grew up in Australia. So in a country of using horse, I went through the normal programs of coming through the pony club system, being a crazy novelty rider, jumping rider, eventing rider. I was riding track work as a young guy. My mother worked in a racing stable with harness horses, trotting horses. So spent a lot of time at the stable when I was a young boy. And yeah, was around the racing industry a lot. And so I, as I was sort of growing up and having eventing horses, I was taking a close watch to the horses on the racetrack and then trying to pick up race horses and start to try to improve them. And that was sort of the beginnings of trying to find out solutions for horses that maybe had some difficulties. Being a young guy, you get good at sort of getting on everyone else's horses, like a lot of people. I had great influence as a child. My grandfather was a collector of horses for my mother when she was young, I could say that. And he would tell me many stories about being his version of a horse whisperer. And that sort of inspired me to understand horses, and I knew that it was interesting. I was an only child, so I was very spent a lot of time with the horses and my other animals, and they were my form of conversation a lot of the time, being an only child. And so that sort of started that journey. And then as I went along, I had the opportunity to come to Europe when I just turned 21, and I met another one of my great mentors, Morten Thompson, who was also a little bit different in the way of learning and the way of looking at things. He was into a lot of circus trainers and people that could do different things with horses. And so that again opened my eyes to the possibility of what was possible with horses, and that there was a difference between training, riding, and teaching a horse something. And that sort of started my unhealthy addiction of going back to Australia. And then I went through university and studied an arts degree, and then continued with horses, as you do. And then I sort of just went through the process of building a business. And you, of course, have to start a lot of young horses. I still was doing a lot of race horses at that time. Then you start to get the difficult horses from all different breeds, disciplines. And through that process, you look for the bits that are missing. You know, why are the horses having difficulties? My sort of career early on was to find these solutions in order to become somebody, to be of value to the industry, to be able to make money. And so I was doing a range of horses, and my livelihood depended on the result. So I was very much focused on how could I get these horses to really believe when they left me that this was their purpose, and that they could be proud to do it, and they could want to do it more than the people that own them did. I had also a lot of wild horses, people going up to places in Australia and choosing, you know, the 8-year-old stallion that has never seen people, and that had to be the wife of the cattle station's horse. And of course, it wasn't if she made a mistake, but when. And I had to make sure that that horse was knowing his job, and that it didn't go back and she get thrown off or injured, because of course the horse world, like it is everywhere in the world, in Australia, is very small, and that would have been also the end of my business. So it was there that I really sort of searched for everybody and anyone that could do something different with horses. I worked an incredible amount of horses at that time. I was starting more than 100 horses a year on my own, in a very sort of quiet, secluded place out in Australia. And so that teaches you a lot, teaches you what not to do. And then, of course, coming to Europe. And then I was traveling backwards and forwards for many years, and I decided to come back about 15 years ago for 2 years was the plan, and I'm still here. And then again, you're nobody, so you have to build a business. And I just tried to continue to learn from the horses and my experiences, and anybody and anyone that could do good with horses and that was going to serve me in order to better myself, in order for me to better the horses.
Great. That's quite a journey.
Yes.
So you've learned a lot from the horses themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. They have been, it's a sort of cliche. A lot of horsemen say that the horses have been the greatest teachers, but for me, I was in that position where they had to be. And of course, what tends to happen is you get good at it. The old saying of you become Harry Potter, and then it's hard not to be Harry Potter, and you build a reputation. And then during the early stages in Europe, I sort of working together with a fellow colleague of mine, Will Rogers, we together were sort of trying to develop horsemanship in Europe to a different level, and to build that bridge between horsemanship and sport. And when you're young guys, you know, you tend to get into that hero position of, you know, getting the wild horse and standing on the back and cracking the whips and setting your ass on fire and being the hero and becoming noticeable in a way. And then you sort of call on the biggest and the baddest and the worst cases, and you learn a lot from them in the end, and you end up putting pressure on yourself by becoming that person and by having to continually prove yourself. There's also that pressure as an Australian or a young guy coming from Australia to Europe that everybody back home is waiting for you to fail. So you've moved to the other side of the world on your own, not speaking the language, not knowing anybody, not having any connections, nothing to turn back to. And so there's a lot of pressure on making it, on making something of yourself. So all those sort of aspects combined forces you to learn. You can't turn around and say, oh, well, that's too hard, or, you know, I want to just focus purely on winning or in sport or, you know, one aspect. You have to become good at everything in order to survive.
So you found your purpose while trying to achieve something, like achieve your, it's kind of a freedom, I guess, as well, to be who you want to be in this world.
Equestrian world, I mean. Yes. I mean, I would go to as far as to say in this world. I mean, horses for me is about self-knowledge and self-improvement. And I went through different phases, of course, of what my purpose was. When you're young and I had the privilege of having very good mentors and, of course, people that I looked up to, Morten being one of them. He had ridden 2 Olympic Games and was very successful in the sport and went on and still is training the best riders in the world. And so I viewed him, you know, as my mentor, as my hero, as someone I looked up to. And so then you strive to also achieve that. And so I spent a long time in sport, trying to get good in the sport and trying to become successful at competition and have the possibility of going to the Olympics or riding in Aachen and things like that. And then you realize, you know, after I'd ridden in Aachen and I was happy with my horse and focus on the test and I forgot to look at the score and get my sheets afterwards, you sort of think, actually, is this something I'm chasing because I think it's something that is my purpose, or is it, you know, really for me? So I went through different stages, you know, wanting to be the big clinician, wanting to run the biggest stable in Europe with the most amount of horses starting under saddle. And as you go through your journey, you're picking new things. And as you're picking new things, you're progressing and learning and becoming more of yourself, more of who you're meant to be. And so definitely horses have helped me to learn that and continually teaching me to learn that. But yeah, through the different phases, if you follow continually where the signs are and where you're most valuable, where you can give, where you can be of most service, where you can provide the most value to others, not only yourself, that sort of has guided me to where I needed to go.
I understand. And I mean, the world of sport as a world of horsemanship is quite big. There's renowned people who came and tried to teach their method. As I see it, it's like the foundation is quite the same. I mean, the horse is a horse. And I was wondering, because I believe you reached this goal of being like having your made a quite of a business, and you've reached thousands of people all around the world. And I was wondering, how does the TRT method differ from other training approaches, and what do you think makes it reach so many people beyond the reach of the internet, but in the sense that it resonates with such a broad audience?
I think, yeah, to sort of delve into all of that, to break down first, I never planned actually ever to make a business. I'm someone that's really terrible with money, and I have sort of actually bad business sense. And I don't really care a lot about money, which in some ways has served me well and in other ways very badly. But I always just focused on the passion of becoming better. And I tried to, of course, learn from anybody and everybody that could do something good with horses, no matter what the discipline. So all of the horsemanship guys, you know, all of the top sport guys, didn't matter what jumping, dressage, eventing, reining, you know, it didn't matter what they were doing with horses, what culture and what discipline and what breed and what purpose, but someone that could uniquely understand that breed or that mindset or that way of working in order to teach the horse what they needed to do according to their discipline. And over the time, the sort of commonality between different disciplines and different methods of training was there was a lot of people trying to get horses to do something. And a lot of the trainers were teaching a method that was trying to teach the people how to control their horses or how to get their horses to do something. And through the influences of having to teach a horse early on in Australia about being in control of himself, because it wasn't, you know, my livelihood was dependent on the horse doing a good job, no matter what the rider that was about to take him on would do. And so in combination with that and then absorbing as much as I could from lots of different disciplines, early on I kind of realized that the importance is in teaching the people not how to control their horses, but teaching the people how to teach their horses to be in control of themselves. And that was sort of the biggest difference for me also between horsemanship and understanding a horse. That's also the same in sport. There's a lot of people and riders that ride at an extremely top level and have incredible skill and have achieved many accolades, and they can get many, many horses and have gotten many horses to do a lot of things, but they don't understand anything about horses. They may have ridden many times at International Grand Prix, but still, if the horse doesn't stand still at the step to get on, or he's slightly afraid of other horses in the warming up, or he gets spooked when there's a noise in the competition or in the arena, they don't know how to teach the horse to be comfortable and to be able to manage himself in the environments they're putting them in. So that's the difference. And the empowerment in being able to teach your horse to thrive in the world we brought him into, that he doesn't have to live with the natural instinct of survival, that he can thrive through knowledge of knowing how to manage himself and what to do in all the spaces and places he's going to find himself in within our human world. If we can teach him that in order for him to be comfortable and to thrive, that is the empowering thing for people, because it gives them a true understanding of their horse. Who is my horse? What is he thinking? And what can I give my horse in order for him to have the best possible life together with me? And it spreads across all horse people, because it doesn't matter if you're trying to get to the Olympics, that is a pretty important priority. If you can have that element in your partnership between you and your horse, it's going to ensure you're going to have much more success in your sport. Same for the lady that has the horse that's her best friend and she just wants to hack out twice a week in the forest, because she's in the office the rest of the time and she only gets to see him twice a week. If while she's there, she can give him the best feeling possible and the time that she spends with her horse is the best part of his day or his week, and she's able to provide that for him, then I think in the end, if I go back to why I became attracted to horses, I always tell the story in my clinics about trying to get people to think back to their first interaction with a horse. What was that first experience, that first memory? You know, when I was a small boy and I was going to the racing stable, I would walk into the stables and I would be looking up at the horses, and I would always choose one for some particular reason. The way he looked at me, probably it looked like he was the one that was going to let me touch him. But that was the thought. The thought was, I hope he would let me touch him. I hope I can let him feel that it's okay. And the experience he's going to have by letting me touch him is going to give him a good feeling. And the memory of that reminds me of the why we do it. Because we get caught up very easily in what we're doing, especially in sport horse, if we make a career in horses, if we become the shifty horse dealer or a vet or a horsemanship guru or a clinician or whatever it is, we of course get caught up in the being that person, and we get caught up in the what we're doing. And sometimes we lose the sense of why we're doing it. And I think the TRT method brings that back to people really quickly. And I think those elements combined makes it, of course, rewarding for the people, but at the same token, it makes it incredibly rewarding for me, because I get to follow now all the individual journeys, and I get to join the community in the online training method, and I get to feel in the beginning that I was just making an online training, and now I realize the gift of what everybody else gives me is that it's much more than that. You know, you're creating a community, a group of people that have sharing a common passion and experience and, yeah, love for their horses.
It's quite of an impact. And I don't know if you noticed, if you saw like a growing interest on people, on willing to know, to understand more their horses at any level. Did you?
Yeah, I notice a growing culture. I don't think... I know for sure through proof that I don't understand the impact.
Okay.
Because I have continuing surprises. I had just one 10 minutes before we got onto this podcast together. There was a video made by my team, and it was a video testimonial of a TRT member that we ran a competition, and all the other members got to choose one member that was – that deserved the most to the competition. Was we were going to fly the person all expenses paid to our VIP day, which turned into a live stream at my place. All the members would get together. This member was chosen, and she happened to be from Australia. So we flew her out from Australia, and she, when she arrived, she told a story that, which we didn't know about, that her sister had been very ill in the UK, and she had not been able to afford the flight to come to see her. And she just happened to, the rest of the community on her participation and her sort of generosity within the community of helping people and giving positive comments and showing videos of her own journey and sharing her own experiences and participating in Q&As, and people felt the presence and how much she was sort of reaching out to help as many people as she could. She won the opportunity and she arrived, and then we realized that it was a much greater opportunity for her personally by now having the opportunity to be able to connect with her sister, which she hadn't for a long time. And then while she was here, they did a short interview of her experience of joining the community in the TRT online training. And I haven't seen that testimonial. I haven't heard that interview. And they've just posted the video on social media, and I watched it 10 minutes before coming on here. And again, there were so many elements, and the experience and the life-changing moments for her just through becoming a member and sharing her story and connecting with all the other people that were sharing their stories. Coming there and being able to meet them in person the first time, people she'd spoken to for a long time, just digitally on the other side of the world. She now got to come and meet in person, feeling like they'd known each other for years. And there was all these things that she'd experienced through following the training, which we think we're just helping some people get their horse on the trailer a bit better or solve some horse show problems or teach them to bow or to do a piaf or a flying change really easily, and yet the impact goes much, much deeper than that.
Yeah, there's a big sense of community. And I'm sure the equestrian community is craving for more of that, and having a safe place as well, like regardless where you're coming from, what disciplines you're into. I mean, and that's great. You managed to create that. I mean, it created kind of itself as well, I guess, but it's really nice.
Yeah, sorry. So I think it's a really important thing you bring up there, that the horse community needs that, because I think it is exactly that, what you say, because I think in all horse areas at the moment, there's a lot of segregation. We're being separated, and a lot of the time through ridicule, you know, through bad publicity and through negativity. And of course, if we're talking about sport now, in the past years, of course, there's been a lot of sort of negative press, and there's a lot of welfare groups and people with hopefully a good intent to make horses' lives better, but through a negative angle, you know, through the horrific photos and the dressage disaster videos and these kinds of things. And I think that sort of self-reflection is very important in the beginning in order to make change. And it has done a lot of positive things, but it also creates suppression and segregation. You know, as soon as there's somebody getting criticized, the first thing somebody does is says, oh, well, that's not me. We're not that bad. You know, we're not treating our horses like this. Those jumping riders are much worse. They're using much worse bits than us, or, you know, whatever the discipline is. And we get this segregation. But of course, if we're talking about the health and survival of horses and horse people through things like public license, how are horse people viewed? You know, the builder or the general Joe Blow down the road, he's not saying, oh, he's a jumping rider that rides at this level and she's a Western rider that's doing reining, but she doesn't use. No, horse people are equestrians. The general public see us as equestrians. So unless we can create change through motivation and inspiration and creating a sense of community, which is unifying people, to create a movement is done through positivity, not through negativity. You know, there was a great quote on one of the horse welfare groups that said, Martin Luther King was a great man. He was against racism. Of course, against, you know, missing the point. He was not against, he was for freedom. He was for equality. He created a movement through empowering people, through inspiration, motivation. So you can talk about negativity all you want, but it's only going to create segregation, which is not healthy. You know, we have to unite people through community. It's what the industry, it's what horse people need. It's what the horses need horse people to do in order for everything to become more healthy.
I can only agree, because that's the aim of this podcast, as well as my own experience, because I never found, I wasn't on the side or the others, but I couldn't find any safe place so that we could like just experience everything, like, and bring horsemanship and understand the horse, but within the sport, and make the sport better as well. But obviously, if you have someone telling you, you've been doing this wrong, I mean, or you're abusing the horse, the person can't open his mind and is not open to the conversation. So, yes, thank you for saying it. And with so, I believe you explain it in the really right way. So I hope it will reach the people. And so, you said like it's obviously about the horse, but it is as well about the people. And I wanted to ask you, how do you, when you're working with the horse and the rider, the owner, how do you integrate this human aspect into your method to make it effective over time? I mean, just like the, because sometimes it's what we see. Okay, I bring your horse, I'll fix it, kind of. I'll show you how. But what happened next? Because I, like, if I understand what you're saying, we people have to change the way we see horses as well. How do you bring it in the conversation, in your method?
So I think the very important thing you said in the beginning is it's about horses. It's about horses through people.
Mm.
Without people, there is no horses. Mm. And without horses, there is no horse people. So it makes it a very poignant fact that it's about the combination. And for many years, of course, I had a training stable. My training stable has been closed now for a little over 2 years. For that reason, because, of course, for many years I was the mechanic, you know, fixing horses. And I could do a lot of them. I could work 100 horses a day.
Mm.
But that didn't help the people. And a lot of the time I felt like I was doing the horses an injustice. It's like taking the child from Africa who has nothing and a lot of bad experiences is literally surviving in the same case as a lot of horses that had come to me in the time. And then you clothe them and you educate them and you feed them and you give them nutrition and nourishment and attention and education. And then you take it all away and you send them back. And, of course, you didn't change the environment in which possibly caused the problem to begin with.
Mm.
And, of course, there's a lot of success stories, but there was a lot of horses that it was good for a month or it was good for a year or two or five. And a lot of the time you didn't hear until it was going bad again. And the blame was continually on the horse, of course.
Mm.
And a lot of the time it comes from the perspective of someone has an idea of what they want to do, what they want to achieve, what their goals are, what their aspirations are, which accolade they're intending to capture, and the vehicle in which to do that is the horse. And when it's not being achieved in the steps or at the speed in which they had imagined, then the problem is within the horse not being able to achieve that.
Hmm.
And, of course, when the horse would come back in training, and the particular undesired behavior would start to go away and things would start to work again. The realization for the human has to be then, what is the factor that changed in that? It's the same horse, but he's having a different conversation with somebody else. And now the undesired behavior seems to go away. There's, of course, also many cases where a horse would come and it would have, let's say, a problem with getting on with Jenny. She couldn't get on. He couldn't stand still. It was a big problem. She tried for a little while, but she was really focused on going to the competitions. So he kind of stood still and she kind of then started to get on and she got away with doing it with someone holding on to the horse. But the underlying problem still stayed and the insecurity grew. And then sensitivity, insecurity started to show up in other areas. He got spooky, things like that. So she gives the horse to John. John is a mad jumping rider, venting rider. He doesn't even go to the step. He just vaults on the horse while the horse is walking. So he doesn't make any issue of the getting on. But the horse is nervous of cows. And on the first cross country, he has a stop because the horse sees a cow in the field. So he comes in training because he said the thing's scared of animals and I can't do the cross country because he's scared. So I say, well, this takes a lot of training and you have to go step by step. We have to build it up. I don't have time for that. I want to be going next week to the competition. I said, well, that's not possible because there needs some time. Oh, well, I don't need to have the horse at all. So then it goes to Margaret and she's doing endurance. She's also just jumping on with a leg up from somebody else. She's not jumping. She's not doing anything. She's just riding long distances in the forest. And I say, hey, isn't that horse that Wendy had in the beginning and she couldn't get on? She says, oh, I don't know. I don't have any problems getting on him. And I think it was also that horse that John had that was afraid of cows.
Oh, really?
Oh, I don't know. He's never been spooky on me. So you have the same horse with three different people, and they could possibly have three different problems in the people in the moment that own them's eyes. So where does the problem sit? Is the problem in this perspective of the owner, or is the problem actually sitting in the horse? And so when we start with a combination now, so the people that I work with now are a combination. None of the horses get sent to me in training. It's about first the people wanting to learn and have some awareness of self. How much do I know about my interaction, my self-projection? How is the horse reading me, therefore the world reading me? And how is that going to influence the conversation in order for us to have an understanding to be able to achieve the thing I want to do together with my horse? That's the most important bit. And so in the beginning, in the online training, we have also an off-the-horse course. So this is teaching us about self-awareness, about our own energy, our own projection of self. This gives an awareness of where you are in this space, spatial awareness. Gives you an understanding of your own physiology, your own self-management, and how to be able to regulate that to be a good horse person, to be able to communicate that easily. And in order to be a good mentor for your horse, a lot of the time people come and there's a lot of different variations, but we put them in the category to give a visualization for themselves of either being the mummy, the mentor, or the dictator. So the dictator is the one that quickly tries to control the horse and is very embarrassed when things are going wrong, can't stand when the horse is being out of line. The mummy is the opposite, always just kissing and cuddling, and when the horse is moving, they move out of the way so there's no friction, and they pat the horse and tell him he's a good boy even when he's freaking out and he's not okay. And, of course, the mentor is the one that can teach them the most about themselves. And so this self-awareness exercise in the beginning of seeing how do we view ourselves and how does our horse view ourselves, if we were to interview the horse, what would he say about us, is the most important aspect of that switch between I want to get this horse to do something and I have a problem to no, it's all dependent on me and my perspective of how I look at it. And when we're able to then, every horse is, of course, having their biography written across their skin. A lot of people are looking. We have to learn to see how it is. And when we can first learn to see ourselves, then it makes it much easier to be able to see the horse. If we're not able to see ourselves in what we are visualizing, where are we at? Are we in the past? Are we continually telling ourselves about the bad stories? Oh, he was always doing this, and when I went outside and I've tried absolutely everything, and you continue to play that old story in your head, or you're someone that's in the future. So I'm explaining about step one. Oh, yeah, but what do I do when I get to the competition? I'm in the warming up. So, well, hang on. We're here today in this moment in the arena. We're not yet there at the competition. And so having an awareness of self lets you understand, okay, where am I at? Am I in the optimal place to be able to improve my situation for myself? And the empowering part about understanding about how you can improve your situation for yourself is the manual to not ever needing anybody ever again. And so that's the empowering part, the motivational part about I can do this. And, of course, that's also the reason why we built the online training, because then that's the referral part. This is also the separation bit between the difference between having a trainer that's going to stand there and say, do this, right hand, right leg, don't do that, stop, back up, slow down. Oh, there, that was good. Did you feel it? No. Okay, do it again. And you're sort of listening, processing, feeling the horse, processing what he's saying, executing the movement, trying to feel and learn if it was good. And you're sort of multitasking on this high level. And in the online training, you're sitting in a focused, quiet place in the right state of mind for processing, absorbing information, you are able to go through visualization. So the powerful thing of telling your brain and your body that you've already done it, having a plan, going to your horse and then executing that without distraction, and then feeling, I mastered that, I need the next bit, or, oh, I know clearly which bit I'm not getting, and I can go back and I can watch, or I can put my video in the community, and a bunch of people can say, oh, you did this and this good, or look at me when I did that, I was terrible. But if you do this and this, it's really going to help. And so we started to see people that were in a kind of very dark place. You know, they're at their wit's end. They don't know what to do with the horse anymore. It's the email you get that says, if you don't take him, you know, I don't know what to do with him. And then very quickly, they themselves on their own are doing things far greater and far better than someone that was actually with me every day training. Every week coming for a lesson. In the beginning, I thought, geez, am I that bad at giving lessons in real life? But it was that thing of people having that separated learning, self-generated learning abilities. They became in the right mindset to self-improve. They weren't saying, here, can you fix my horse while I sit here and do absolutely nothing to help myself?
Yeah, and we're going back to the power of community as well. It is something. Now I understand as you're talking that it is really something that we're kind of missing out, that power of community, of working together, and how important it is to work together to improve. And the more people, I guess the better, because we have more example as well. And if we have the right guidelines, well, it makes it easier. Then I wonder if this part of self-awareness and willing as well to rethink the way we were doing with the horses isn't the hardest one. Because as human, we have as well like the ego and stuff, and maybe even more for someone who's been working in the industry for a very long time, and then you have to rethink everything, and it is difficult to admit and to take the first step.
Absolutely. And it's not for everybody. It is too hard for a lot of people. I think it's an important thing to realize that the horse industry to work and to make a living, to survive in and from the horse industry, is hard. And so a lot of the time we grasp onto the things we think have got us to where we are. And we're sometimes afraid to let go of that. I see a lot of trainers that have come through a system and they've got a title. They become the head varietor, or they got to a place where they are recognized by people. And that sort of self-image is who they are. And if I start to reflect and I see that some of those things aren't perfect, then the world that I've spent all these blood, sweat, and tears building, this human, this person, this image that I've built, starts to break down, then it could be the end. And that's too scary for a lot of people. Some are too lazy. You know, it's too much work. And maybe I don't end up being the best of the best, but I'm okay with that. So I just keep doing this and I go around the difficult bits, or I don't really go deep into some aspects of what I'm really doing, because then I have to unravel a whole lot of stuff, and I can still achieve a certain level of success, and I can still survive and keep doing kind of what I'm doing. and I still get to go on my holidays, and I still get to go to Ibiza, and I still get to do all the things that I like to do. So why should I, you know, change anything?
Mm.
And it's a huge spectrum in the horse world. You know, there's many, many, many different people, and everybody's in horses for a different reason. And that's what makes it difficult to kind of bring people together with mixed ideas and morals and ethics and these sorts of things. But I think what innately drives humans to want to live is to have the best possible human experience. And to do that, you have to become purely honest with yourself. And for me, and from what I see from the many thousands of people that have joined me on the online training through the communities and the clinics and the seminars and all those things, is that they think so too, that the horses is bringing that element to them.
Mm.
And so I think that can be the biggest unifier of horse people, is that we're all looking for that experience. We're all looking for that feeling. It's an emotion, you know, connected to a feeling that we're chasing. It doesn't matter what discipline, doesn't matter what sport, what your goals are, what your aspirations are, what your past is, what your upbringing is, what your culture is, what language you speak. In the end, we are all human and we're all looking for the same thing.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Yes, I totally agree. And I believe as well that there people won't ever take this step, but I believe as well that there's people we think won't take the step, but inside, some they're trying, or maybe when people are not looking. So that's, if we're going back to what we were saying before, just bring the conversation and in the right way as well. Because even if sometimes they act as they don't want to listen, I believe they do in somehow. And that we put a seed somewhere. They'll take the step or not, but the seed is here. So I think it's a good thing just to talk about it.
Absolutely.
I have, if you don't mind, a last question. I have many, but let's say I'll pick a last one before going through the short question I ask to all the guests. So going back to what we talk about horse welfare in modern riding, and that's been talked a lot nowadays. Now we're not talking only to the extent that about her horse living in a suitable and pain-free environment, but we talk also about horses living a life worth living. Do you think that modern riding is compatible with this goal, sort of?
I think that, we have a slogan at TRT Method that's creating a life for horses better than nature intended.
Even better.
And so for that, we have to realize that nature is not the utopian world in which animals live their best life. Nature, when you get to see it close up, is incredibly cruel, and it puts everybody in a state of survival. Surviving, it's different than thriving. Horses have also come a long way in breeding, in evolution. They've been domesticated, the same as dogs, you know, the same as a lot of animals that have had a long interaction with humans. But of course, through the cycle of humans and horses being together, we've created really strong aspects in which we both rely on, which is that connection. Connection, conversation, the sense of purpose and the sense of accomplishment. And these are things that horses cannot achieve in nature. They cannot learn the things we're able to teach them about their body. Through the beginning of the TRT training, from a foal a few days old, we are teaching them the correct order of movement that creates a pure conversation, an optimal way of moving in their body. And this is an empowerment that allows the horse to become its best self through understanding their body and the coordination, the correct order of movement to create an optimal way of existence, being able to walk to the water, walk to the hay, run in the field, all of these things. They can stumble across it in nature, depending on the landscape in which they're born in. The Dutch horse is different to Spanish horses, should be much less athletic because they grow up on a very flat country with not much difference in terrain. Yes. They don't have to navigate rocks or rivers or any of that stuff. Mm-hmm. So, you know, where the environment in which, you know, they're growing up in is going to depend on that development. But the same for a horse in, together with humans, in a human environment. The environment in which that horse is growing up in, the humans in which he's having contact with, is going to determine the quality of his life. But the fact that we have horses for to give purpose, to give the feeling of accomplishment, achieving something, understanding something about your body, having these interactions in which they can learn to move and to be happy in a much higher degree than surviving, looking for food, looking for water, being in a certain pecking order with the other horses, fighting for your position. But they can truly thrive and truly have an opportunity to be themselves and to be able to understand that if they can have the tools to be able to know what to do with themselves in any given situation and not have to rely on the natural flight instinct to survive, it is the difference between living in the third world or in nature and fending for yourself, or being in a situation where you can become the best version of yourself. But what's really important is that the horses find themselves a good human. And it's, of course, very important for us that we become good humans for our horses in order for them to achieve that. And it's this that we have to think about first. Because without this, we're not able to achieve all the other things. Without a whole lot of resistance or failures or undesired behaviors or horses that don't match or horses that don't end up being sound, horses that don't end up fitting the purpose. And so when we have this focus first and we can teach our horses to move in an optimal way in their physiology for them to be comfortable every day, we're able to teach them the elements in which they're going to be exposed to in their environment, things that would naturally cause them to be afraid, and that they will be in those spaces, and that we can teach them before we put them in those spaces how they can manage themselves. A lot of the time in sport, horses are stepping out on stage and they've never learned how to present themselves. They've never learned how to be a performer. They end up having forced conditioning. They end up have learning stage fright because of lack of preparation. They become noise sensitive. They get horse shy. They, you know, whatever it is, the jumping horse is afraid of the water jump. The, you know, this, the list goes on and on and on and on. But of course, that's the lack of focusing on what are the horse's basic needs in the beginning. What does he need to know? What are the real skills? What are the real tools he needs to have in his toolkit in order to thrive in this environment? Sometimes I think that's where the humans and sport fail the horses, is we look at the sport first and the technical aspect of riding. We have to do this, this, and this, and this in order for them to learn to be able to execute the thing for the sport, jumping or the flying changes or whatever it is for whatever sport. We focus on the technical aspect of riding instead of what is it that first our horses need to be comfortable in the environment they're living in. Because if they're not comfortable in the environment they're living in and the spaces and places they're going to find themselves in, then they're not going to be able to perform. They're going to get into a state of fear. They're going to get into having to defend themselves, which creates images and videos that is flying around the internet because of that. And I'm qualified to speak about it because I'm that guy. I'm the guy after the stallion show that gets all the phone calls and all the emails. I'm the guy they call after their dressage disaster video has been posted all over YouTube. You know, I'm meeting the horses that have, that are in that space, that have been failed, that have had not had that information, got into a place where the expectation is way too high. The expectation is much higher than the level of knowledge to know how to handle themselves in those situations. And then the shit hits the fan and it gets all ugly. And then there's some bad press about it. And then we have to try to put it all back together. But if we start in that place of giving them the things they need before we set them out into the tasks we want them to perform, then we are already turning it at least 180 degrees.
Definitely. Well, it's so valuable. I really hope that it would give another way of thinking to the people who'd listen to this episode, because it's really, really valuable and made us think about the horse, us and the horse, and the sport as well. I mean, so really thank you for everything, because we need to hear it more often, definitely. Well, as I said, I'll have thousands of more questions, but fortunately you're quite, there's a lot of free content of yourself as well as your program on the internet. So I really would say, like, to people to go and check, because there's a lot of valuable content on the internet. So to end this interview, as I said earlier, there's like quick questions I used to ask to every guest who's coming to the Modern Rider. The first one is if you'd like to change anything about your journey so far.
No. And it sounds cliche, but of course, all of the things that I've experienced and been through and all the difficulties, all the mistakes I've made have been the valuable parts of getting me to where I am and creating who I am.
Great. Is there any message you'd like to share with the equestrian community?
Message? Yeah, I just think the message we've just shared through this whole podcast, actually. And I think what's really important to say to the equestrian world in this time is that it's okay. It's okay to make mistakes. There's not anywhere in the world where everybody is doing something absolutely perfect. You know, there are inconsistencies, there are blemishes, there are faults. The most important bit is that we can view them as being information in which we can use, and that we can be motivated about trying to improve or trying to feel better or trying to make the next experience more fulfilling, and that it's okay. You know, it's, if something goes wrong if we get down the wrong path, if we do some of the wrong things at some point and someone pulls us up on it, or we create a bad reflection, or we get a bad comment, it's okay, because we need these things. We need to have reflection, but we also need to be able to support each other and say it's okay. Because without it being okay, we can't begin to make it better. We only stay in the point of defense that we didn't really do anything wrong, and it's not that bad, and it's not, you know, it's okay to do something wrong, and to realize that it was wrong, and or that you can improve it. And in the at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what social media says, or that you've got a six-year-old and you just saw a six-year-old on an Instagram reel that's already doing changes, so why isn't yours? Or someone in your stable has got a horse that's, you know, not as talented as yours, but he's able to do 10 times more things than you. None of it is relevant to you. None of it matters. The only thing that matters is your experience and what you're able to give yourself, together with your horse, your one horse, your two horse, the many horses you may have contact with. So it's okay, and it doesn't matter.
That's a great advice. Is there anyone you'd recommend me to interview for a future episode on the podcast?
Oh, gee, there's many. I mean, that depends where you want to go. If there's riders or there's, you know.
There's all of kind of professional in the podcast, to veterinarian, to podologist, to riders, to anyone.
Yeah, I think it's, I mean, this can be many, many, many people. I was impressed recently. There's a lot of, now my brain's going a million miles an hour. I mean, we have so many interesting people.
Yes.
In the horse world, from so many different areas, you know, that are so far down their own journey to such an interesting place that other people need to know about. I think it's most important for people to hear from people that are stepping outside of their career. People that now can create a little bit of distance from maybe being in the sport and being in the chase and being in the hunt, or building their career, or I'm going to let that be a surprise for your guests. I'm going to send you privately.
Right. That's what I was thinking.
And I'll send you the reason why, the person and the reason why. When you invite them on, and I'll make sure that you get permission that they agree to be on, and then you can say this guest was here because Tristan suggested it.
All right. Perfect. Thank you. I'll wait for the email then. Is there any book or resources you'd like to recommend apart from your program, which I recommend to?
From my program, we are busy writing quite a few books for my program. Of course, the online training is growing all the time. We have a lot of new programs coming out this year. I'm currently reading the I Ching. This is the Book of the Change.
Okay.
This is about Chinese philosophy. It's many thousands of years old. And it's, based on how to live. I'm had recent journeys into the last few years taking on Tai Chi and Qigong, learning about my own energy, Buddhism, and Chinese philosophy. So I'm right into that at the moment. What I'm learning about energy through doing the Tai Chi and Qigong exercises is I can better understand my projection of self and a way of communicating and connecting with the horses on another level. So those things at the moment are inspiring me. And the Book of the Change is kind of that very old book of Chinese philosophy of what to become aware of to better understand self.
Great. Well, I'll put the link on the notes. And last one. there's a playlist in Spotify of guest favorite and motivational songs. And I wanted to ask you if you'd like to add one.
Motivational songs.
Or favorite. The one you like.
I actually now I'm teaching my horses meditation.
Okay.
And I'm in the round pen or I'm in a quiet space. And then you're thinking, you know, this could be some kind of yoga music or something of that description, but it's actually not.
Okay.
And the song is of a guitar band. And I'm going to have to send that to you as well.
Great.
You
can put that one in your notes.
But yeah, it's a song that is, it's an acoustic song, two guitarists and a guy playing on a drum. And it's a song that, has a lot of rhythm. So it's very good for working with the horses, but it gets you very much into feeling the internal rhythm of your body. And so that enables me to connect to myself very well, which gives an awareness to the horse for him to feel himself, to connect to himself very well, to have a good awareness of his body and to get into a state of total relaxation through feeling himself, understanding the difference between tension, how to release tension in order to get into the perfect state of relaxation in feeling self. And sometimes I use that song while I'm with the horses practicing that.
Great. Interesting.
And I've recommended it to people and they've played the song without going through the training or the practices or the forms or the exercises or the breathing and have had the same experience without just by having the song.
Okay.
So
it
sounds very good. And if you go now and you just listen to it, you'll think, yeah, that sounds a bit ordinary. But then when you go and you're in that space with your horse and then you listen, it does something else.
Okay. Well, I can't wait to try.
I'll send you the link.
Okay, yes, please. Well, many, many, many thanks. I'm really grateful for this conversation. It could have gone on and on and on because it's so valuable, as I said earlier. So yes, thank you is the word is coming.
Thank you. Keep up the good work. It's people like you running things like this that do plant the seeds, as you say.
Yeah, well, I'll send it back to you. Thanks again.
Thank you very much.
And so we come to the end of our episode today. I hope this conversation was as insightful for you as it was for me. You can find additional details about Tristan's method, information, and recommendation in the episode's notes. And as always, I want to remind you that your participation is essential. If you enjoyed this episode and would like to support the podcast, I invite you to leave a note or comment. Sharing it with your contacts is also an excellent way to spread this valuable information. Thank you again for sharing your time with us, and we'll see you in 2 weeks for a new exciting interview.